At Armstrong, your connectivity is backed by local technicians, our 24-7 network operations team, and our 24-7 customer service center. Armstrong, unmatched employees, unmatched customer care, unmatched fiber network.
Here we go again, another episode of Street Scene Power Hour. Welcome everyone to the next Street Scene Power Hour episode. I've got the legendary Rick Herrera and the other legendary Larry Ward with me as our host, and welcoming Roy Dykeman as our special guest and our co-host for the Street Scene Car and Custom Bike Show, Krista Sylvester. Welcome everyone to this episode of Street Scene Power Hour.
And who are you?
Thank you.
Oh, I'm Greg Roten. Everybody knows me. That's why I didn't introduce myself. Who cares, in other words? Well, I tell you what, let's get started off. Larry, why don't you start us off? Let's talk with Roy Dykeman just for a few minutes here.
Well, I usually start off with, hi, everybody. It's Larry Ward. It's the two-wheel power hour, the fastest hour on the radio on the Big Stick 570 WKBN. That's been going on for about 21 years until I retired recently. And for the past 21 years, my co-host standing by is Roy Dykeman. I'd like to introduce Roy. He is one of the most noted motorcyclists in our community, amassing over 400,000 miles, driven to all 50 states, and is an ambassador, which is a high-ranking position with the BMW Motorcycle Owners of America. Roy first introduced me to long-distance riding and touring some, 24 years ago, and we kind of became friends, and then I asked him to come on the show and talk about touring and travel. And so I'd like to introduce my good friend and also my co-host for the past 21 years, Roy Dykeman. Welcome to the Street Scene Power Hour, Roy.
Well, good evening, everybody. It's a pleasure to come back on and talk a little bit about riding motorcycles in the country and the idea of motivating the people to ride motorcycles.
One of the neat things about being an ambassador or being promoted, it's a very strenuous vetting that you have to go through, and it's sort of like applying for a law enforcement position, which, by the way, Roy is a retired law enforcement officer. But the vetting for the BMW ambassador program means that you have to write letters in there. You have to be able to, many people have to attest to, you know, what you've done for motorcycling, what you've done for BMW. And one of the things I can share on a very brief note is that one of Roy's nephews had just gotten married, and they wanted to tour around the country. And correct me on any of this, Roy, but one day Roy asked his nephew when he was over from New York or Philadelphia, how much money do you have in your pocket? And I think the guy said, I don't know, $22 or something. And Roy handed him the keys of then I practically knew BMW K. I think it was a 100RT, which is a four-cylinder, water-cooled, top-of-the-line BMW touring bike. And he just said, here it is. It's yours now. Take your wife. And before you have kids, go start traveling. And that's exactly what the young man did. So I think that more embodies what Roy is about for motorcycling. He's always there to help people out. And he's especially there for anybody new getting involved in the sport of motorcycling. So it's been pretty terrific. Roy, I'd like you to tell our listeners a little bit, or our viewers, I should say, how you got started in motorcycling. I know the moped fever kind of hit you early.
Yeah, I needed transportation. I had a paper route. I had 189 papers, and I needed a way to deliver these fairly rapidly. And but that was after I was a gearhead, I guess, from the get-go, because I had a little electric scooter that I made. And then after that, I got a Sears Allstate moped. And I had that for a little while. And then they told me I couldn't ride it because I needed a license to do it. So I had to wait a year or whatever it was, a few months. And then I could get my driver's license and then I could drive it on the road. I drove on the road for probably 6 months before I ever got my license. But that's how it started. I delivered papers. I worked for a local contractor here in town, Bill Spies, and building homes. And I needed a way to get to some of the homes. And I mowed out on his farm and stuff like that. So that was the reason behind the motorcycle. And loved riding. Of course, when you ride a motorcycle, you're getting your freedom, especially at that age. It's just like anybody getting a driver's license. You once you get your driver's license, you have a lot of freedom to go, you know, wherever you'd like. But more often than not, you're probably traveling to places that your parents didn't want you to go. But it's a freedom deal, and motorcycling is the same way. The only difference is you're out in the elements in a motorcycle, so you feel more a part of the world, I'll say, instead of being cooped up in a cage vehicle.
Well, you know, when you talk about being out in the elements, Roy and I came back from Kentucky on Sunday, and we kind of thought we had it made because we had looked at the weather and we decided to go east and north rather than north. And we skirted for probably 3 hours, the rain, until 150 miles to go from home. And then it opened up and it poured like crazy. And I was bringing back my Harley that I just bought down in West Virginia, an old Harley Bagger bike, and I'd rebuilt the carb and stuff. And I'm thinking, boy, I sure hope this thing doesn't quit on the water. But everything ran good. But you learn a lot about yourself and things like that when you're traveling long distance. And speaking of that, Roy, right before or right after you retired, you embarked on a pretty...
Yeah, I would say it was, what do I say? Probably the biggest ride that I've ever taken. It was from Key West, Florida, the furthest point in North America, furthest point south. And I went to Prudhoe Bay in the Arctic Circle. That's the furthest point north America. And then coming back from there, I went down to Gig Harbor in Washington State. And then I went down to Colorado because there was a rally in Colorado. And then the MOA National Rally was in Vermont. And so I went from Colorado to Vermont, and it was the most miles I had ridden in 6 months was 38,000 miles. So it made a pretty big trip, but I was glad to get home.
You have a back left after that.
Yeah, and a butt. Gosh.
You really get enough. You don't have to go that far to get enough miles on a motorcycle, but that was the most I've ridden in 6 months.
Hey, Roy, is that the same bike? You did that all on one bike?
Yes.
What kind of bike was it?
It was a what they call a GS, a BMW. Yes, it's a on-off the road bike. The only change is I put a gas tank on it. Because from Fairbanks up to Prudhoe Bay, you can't make it on a tank of gas. And I put an off-the-road tire on the motorcycle. But other than that, I didn't change anything that I had on the motorcycle.
What brand of bike was it? I missed that.
It was a BMW.
BMW, okay.
I think that was 1100 BMW.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, moving on, you know, we're kind of at the opposite ends here. We've got the motorcycling, you know, crowd here with Roy, and we have our guest Krista, who is, you know, she's our guest host for a Street Scene Car Custom Bike Show, and she's graced us for years as soon as we started this car custom bike show, which is coming up July 25th. So you can't miss it because, Rick, you know, we're all, you know, we're going to be there. And Krista, you know, you've had the car and the car bug hit you at an early age. Why don't you give us a little bit of history on how that hit you? Because Krista is one of the most knowledgeable females I've ever seen with cars. I couldn't believe it, you know. So give us a run us down on how that hit you.
Well, that was a very generous breakdown of what I know. I'm always still learning, and it's just cars and motorized vehicles have always been something that since I was a kid, you know, growing up in Youngstown, Ohio, my dad grew up, you know, on the racetrack and around vehicles and taking them apart and putting them back together. So he was the gearhead, and my brother is older than me, and I kind of did whatever my brother did. I didn't do the girly things. I didn't play with the dolls. I played with Legos and Kinects and, you know, dinosaurs and whatever my brother did. So when him and my dad started getting into cars really early and going to the car shows that used to be at A&W, which a lot of people still remember those, our family business, our office is right behind where the A&W is located. So they always park in our parking lot as well. So, you know, just kind of my dad would take us and we'd walk through and we'd, you know, get a A&W root beer float and walk through. And I would say, you know, what's that sticking out of the top of that engine? You know, that, and it was a supercharger or a blower. And my dad would go, oh, that's a supercharger. What does that do? And he would tell me, and I would see cars that I liked. You know, I was always a fan of the Screaming Chicken. So I'd always, you know, see the Trans Ams and get excited about those, even though I didn't really know. I was an animal girl, so I liked anything with an animal. And, you know, like the Cudas and all that. So I was just around it when I was young. And I was never good at math. I was never good at certain subjects in school. But if I was just hearing someone in the distance talk about cars, it clicked. Yeah. And I would remember what they were saying. And then as I got into high school was when Fast and Furious came out. So my brother gets into Fast and Furious, and I see him and his friends out wrenching on the cars. And instead of going and getting drunk on the weekends, they were having a ball, you know, working in our garage on these really cool cars. And then they'd go, you know, blow people's doors off at the racetrack. So I watched that happen and I was like, this is great. I love this. And then of course, my dad was always into mostly the exotics. Our family's Italian. Larry's back. We lost him.
Yep. Hi, Larry.
And yeah, so I just kind of...
I'm back.
Hi, Larry.
I hope you could hear us.
Hello.
He's back. So no, that's literally how I got into it. And it's just always been something that as the more I learn about, especially what goes into the passions behind a lot of the stories on, you know, how vehicles came to be, you know, and what really goes into... to making these things a part of our lives, it's just been a passion for me that's never died. And I definitely have a soft spot in my heart for the old American muscle cars and the classics, because I don't mean to be judgmental of most modern day cars, but I feel like a lot of them are starting to look like giant eggs and they all look the same to me. They're all starting to look the same. They have that aerodynamic egg shape. Mm-hmm. And back in the day, you know, you had all that chrome and all those angles and those lines, and they were just beautiful. So it's a cool culture to be a part of, definitely.
So your brother Joe's into something big also, right?
Yeah. Big is an understatement. 12,000 pounds to be exact. Yeah. So, you know, my brother, of course, pretty much started to drive anything with wheels when he was little. And like I said, I kind of followed suit with that. I stuck more to the sports with just kind of a passion into the automotive, whereby my brother went right into the automotive, and he went from dirt bikes to ATVs to building them to he's done short course off-road trucks. He's done circle track racing, go-kart racing, lifted trucks. And then of course he graduated up into a monster truck. So he ran with Monster Jam for several years. Bought an old monster truck, I think out of North Carolina, called the Carolina Crusher. It was sitting in somebody's yard for sale. And he bought it and learned how to weld and put that thing back together. And I think he started with a truck about 10 or 11 years ago, maybe a little bit more. that had, I think, 800 or 900 horsepower max, which isn't much to push a 12,000 pound vehicle. It's not going to go very fast.
Yeah.
And then he graduated through hard work and getting out there and getting sponsors and getting better at the craft. I believe the one that he's running now, which is Bad Habit Relapse. This first one was called Bad Habit, classic name. You got a bad habit. Mm-hmm. This one's Bad Habit Relapse. Pretty sure he's running anywhere between 22 and 2,500 horsepower.
He's in this circle, right? That they travel all around, right?
They do. They travel all over. He's not traveling with Monster Jam right now because I think Monster Jam with COVID, of course, had a lot of changes that happened, but he's mm-hmm. doing a lot of independent shows, and he actually is supposedly having one, I believe, in September at the Canfield Fair.
I was telling Greg about that. We got to see if it'll work.
You may want to come to that. It should be pretty great.
I ran into your brother at the barber shop last week. The stylist, we'll say. He was getting his haircut. Paulie Paletto's place, and mm-hmm. Paulie James, he goes by. But yeah. Ran into him there. So that's
of course I love being a part of this show and meeting individuals like you, Roy, and Larry, and of course Rick and Greg. Working with you guys, it's always fun to go around and interview people and ask them, you know, what makes them tick, and just learn something new about a vehicle that I probably didn't know about or maybe had very limited knowledge. It's always great. I think especially people wrenching on both cars and bikes, it's a dying culture, and we're seeing it start to go away. And, you know, kids just aren't getting into it the way that they used to. And with everything being electronic, you know, battery powered vehicles, it's not the same. So you can't, you know, turn a wrench and get it to work again. It's just not the same. So, you know, it's cool to be a part of something like this where we can keep showcasing the passions that people still have for both old and new.
Well, I you know what, it's one of those things I keep thinking of this all the time is when the electric vehicles kind of start to take over on the motorcycle end and the car end. You know, if you're going to go out to a rally race or a drag race or something, it's going to be too quiet.
I have a story about that. I was at a Cars and Coffee in Cranberry, PA, and I was with my father and I was with my boyfriend, and my dad goes, a Harley Davidson just went past me and it made no noise. And I knew which one he was talking about because it was there at the prior Cars and Coffee, but I had never seen one before. It was the electric, one of the electric Harley Davidsons. He goes, it went right past us. He goes, and if I didn't look at the name on the side of the bike, I would have had no idea. And he was just blown away. And Harley kicks butt in drag racing. So I'm curious to see kind of what, and you know, maybe Larry and Murray, maybe you guys know a little bit about it, but I'm interested kind of to see what they do with the, you know, in the electric realm with Harley Davidson.
Are they producing those now, or is that just a prototype, the electric one? Larry?
The program's called Livewire. And yes, mm-hmm. They're producing them. And they have one down at Youngstown Harley-Davidson if you want to go take a look at it. But they're ungodly expensive. But all motorcycles now, big bikes, are really mm-hmm. there. Yeah. I mean, it used to be you could buy a really nice bike with bags for 10 grand. Now that's about what a moped costs anymore. I mean, bikes are around 23,000. You get an SVO or a CVO Harley, the punched out now, you're in the mid-30s, easy, you know. So. But that Livewire program, Roy and I attended, we go to Daytona every year when we had the show on and that and covered the races. But one of the things that was really eerie was the first race at the Daytona Speedway that was all electric bikes. And they're ungodly fast. And there's no accelerating through the gears. When it's on, it's on and it goes. But there is a... there's a little bit of an unnerving whine to the whole thing. And that's really the sounds that you hear is, you know, the motors winding up kind of thing. But to speak to Krista about Harley Davidson doing well in drag racing, they do well in a couple of different disciplines. They're still pretty prominent with the XR750, which is a 1950s, 1960s design, 750 twin flat track racer, better on the mile than anything. And they do very well with the what we call the destroyer. That was their street rod, and it was built for drag racing. And Warren Harley Davidson campaigned that. And many years ago, we followed them to Gainesville, where they won the All Harley Drag Racing Association title aboard a destroyer. And those bikes will clip along. They'll get through the traps at about pretty close to 160 miles an hour, 11 seconds. So they're moving along. But there's also one other thing that Harley excels in, and they have a new class now called the Street Bagger class for the American Motorcycle Association. That's truly where they're taking big bikes, Indians and Harleys, that are full fairing bagger bikes. And of course, they're tweaked to the max, but they are drawing legendary crowds. When Harley races, people come out to watch them. And of course, the old Indian Harley thing now is coming back pretty strong. Indians been dominant on the flat track racing for the last 10 years until Harley could get the XG750 going. And they got it going to where it was up on the podium pretty consistently. And then this year they decided to step out and just sponsor privateer racing on that. So kind of interesting. But Roy, anything you want to address on that?
Yeah, their paint jobs are unbeatable. The resale value is high for Harley-Davidson. If it doesn't have too many miles on it, you get them with some miles on them, the resale is quite a bit less. But the electric bikes are there. They're coming around. The performance on them is almost up to where the gas-operated bikes are. So I know it won't be long, and we'll see the bike go, and we'll wonder, is it coasting or is it underpowered? Because you're not going to hear it. But it's going to be quick, because they, like Larry said, when your electric is on, you have instant torque. So their biggest problem, and the same thing with the cars, they're the mileage, they can't go very far on a battery charge. Well, once they get those batteries, you know, and they'll be working on them, making them better all the time. But once they get those batteries where they can go more miles, longer, I think you'll see a big change. Although this is gonna be rough for the government. That gas tax is gonna go away because they got electric vehicles. They're not paying the tax.
They'll figure out another way, believe me.
they'll come up with another tax. And there's no question about that.
What was your
money? Everybody forgets that it's fossil fuel, though, that will power the generators that make electricity. So,
they're not only for cars. So, you know, make plastics out of it. Yeah, we won't go into all that, but
I've ridden an electric bike, and I'll tell you what, I've ridden it at speed, and it's a totally, I mean, when you're going around the curves, you know, leaning a bike is leaning a bike, but like Roy said, it's instant on torque. You know, the braking is much different on an electric bike than it is on how do you approach the apexes, how the thing slows down, how you slow it down. You know, a lot of things enter into it. It takes a little while to get used to it, more than just one ride around the track, you know.
Are the electric bikes lighter than the motorized bikes?
You would think so, but because of the batteries, they're not.
I mean, Teslas are extremely heavy vehicles because of the batteries. Yeah.
Krista, you're right, but I'll tell you, the Tesla's managed now to somehow get 200 and some miles on a charge.
And I know.
They've been able to recharge things in something like 6 hours, too. And that really becomes a game changer, because if you have a Tesla and you want to go from here to Daytona Beach, it's 971 miles, say.
Right.
Well, that's three stops. So, you know, instead of making the trip in one day, you're probably going to make it in 2 or 3 days, but you'll be able to plug that thing into wherever. You know, I was at Corvette Museum 2 years ago, and in the parking lot, they had 25, and it looked like gas pumps, but they're recharging stations 2 years ago for electric vehicles.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that is going to come. And in a way, it's kind of a bittersweet thing. I think it probably eventually is better for the environment. But on the other side of the thing, it's what we all grew up loving, you know, the sounds. I mean, you know, standing next to a Harley that's silent going potato, potato, potato.
Yeah, it was very strange. And then also to what you just said, Larry, about the charge distance, Fisker with their Karma had a decent idea where they put the roof is actually panels, right. Electric panels. And mm-hmm. it helps a little bit, but you know, if someone were to really, really tinker with it and figure it out, that could be a possibility too, you know, depending on where you're driving. I mean, obviously in Ohio, it may not be the most, yeah. you know, right. may not get too much of a charge out of that one, but for the Southern states, you know, and out West, you know, if they were to implement something like that, where they have the solar panels on the roof, you know, on the car to help kind of keep the charge holding steady at least, or something like that, depending on what speed, you know, you're driving and how much pull you're taking out of the batteries, that could be a good idea too, which I'm sure someone's working on.
Yeah, but you know what I was always thinking, you know, to recharge these batteries, you've got friction turning on wheels. You know, I can't understand, and again, maybe it's complete my stupidity, of you have four wheels turning going down the road, why couldn't you have you know, kind of like a stator that's charging batteries while you're driving, you know, charging those batteries up.
They have a system called electromotive force, EMF, and it's a back pressure, they call it. And whenever you let off the throttle, it's supposed to, you know, start to recharge those batteries. Every time you let off and it's coasting, that's what it's supposed to be doing. It has a system in there to recharge them. But, you know, it's like those Prius, you know, yeah. when they run on their little gas motor, they're charging those batteries, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, I'll tell you what, it has come faster than I thought it would.
Oh, yeah. Roy, everybody's going to be making them. Yeah.
You know, what year was it, Roy, that we saw the bikes at Daytona that were electric? Remember, we were in the infield there on the, do you remember how many years
ago? It's been a while, too, since we saw that. I'm going to say probably 10 years. And last month we were at Canaan Valley. It's a snowmobile or ski and resort in West Virginia. And they had charging things available down the Canaan Valley. So
it's pretty common now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see them quite a few places right now.
Yeah.
You know, they're supposed to be really a dependable car and everything, the Tesla, less parts and things can go wrong. But I heard a story today. One big thing that they never figured was going to happen, the rats are eating the wiring. You believe that? Well, down in Florida, the rats are getting up in there eating the wiring because it's so salty, I guess. You believe that one?
Yeah, that's probably a real problem.
Parking it in the yard.
Yeah.
Parking the damn thing in the yard.
Yeah.
Let me interrupt here. If you're listening to us or watching us, this is a Street Scene Power Hour. You're listening on Buzzsprout. And if you're watching us, you're probably watching us on our Armstrong Neighborhood Channel YouTube page. Or if you're in the Boardman area, you're watching it on Armstrong Channel 100. And again, we are, you know, it's Rick Guerrera, Larry Warden, I'm Greg Roden. We have special guests Roy Dykeman with us and Krista Sylvester. And we are happy to have them with us. So I want to put a plug in. July 25th is our Street Scene Car and Custom Bike Show. We have revamped everything in this show. It got to where we, you know, Krista's family was so generous in donating their lot down when they had Shepherd Self Storage from Bourbon for years. And we brought on Krista as our co-host. And that was our first kind of generation of the show. We moved it out once we moved it to Chili's for our second generation. Well, since we had COVID last year, we had a year off and it was time to start the show over again. So what we did was we moved it to Austintown Park this year. So it'd be July 25th at Austintown Park. We have Vegas band, Youngstown's Vegas band playing from 11:30 to 1. We have DJ Thomas John returning from 1 to 3, and we're going to give away some door prizes. We have 4 big raffle items to give away. and the trophies are unheard of this year. Youngstown Cycle Supply has built, hand-built and hand-painted our trophies this year. We have not bought, we didn't buy them from some vendor. We got them custom built locally, and they are incredible. Just wait till you see them, but you have to come out to the show on July 25th. And after the show is over, we've got an organized cruise from Austin Town down to Quaker Steak and Lube for the after party. They're going to block off the roads at Austin Town for us. We're going to cruise, organized cruise right down there. There's, you know, there's two lanes. We'll go side by side. So looking forward to it. This is Street Scene Card Custom Bike Show on July 25th. Generation 3 is what we're calling it. So we're going to welcome Krista to come and co-host for us. I have a couple camera people. I will be not running camera this year. I will be trying to tear my hair out, trying to keep it organized this year. So
you'll be fine. You'll be fine.
We'll be, just pray for good weather. That's all I can say. So, so make sure you stop on out with us. So
I had the opportunity to run into Vegas last week at the Magic Tree over in Boardman. They're a really good band. There's three piece band, and they're really good.
They really came through for us, because it was the first band. It's like, we need a genre band that's going to kind of cater to what people want to hear. And Vegas was right off the top of my head on that one. And they were so generous and said, we will definitely come out. We've got Molnar's. We've got some vendors coming out. Youngstown Cycle Supply. Molnar's will be providing the food. We've got the Cub Scouts that are coming out to raise money for, they're going to sell drinks for there. You know, we've got Youngstown Cycle Supply, I think I said. We've got a vendor coming out that does some awesome, and they actually gave us some for door prizes. They do engraving in wood. It's really cool. So we've got a lot to come out.
Is the public going to be able to buy t-shirts this year?
Brian Kayaza is gracing us. He's going to be making t-shirts. So we will have t-shirts.
Big B.
Yeah. Brian will be there. He's going to make the t-shirts for us. So we will have that.
If I could, Greg, I'd like to throw a shout out to Adam Pratt from Youngstown Cycle. You know, I try them instead of buying from the internet. When I buy a lot of my Harley parts, I go right to Adam. He used to give me a little bit better deal, but I try and support the guy that's in the community. Adam does a terrific job, and his bike shop is eclectic with all kinds of different things. Not only you see some cool bikes, but his artwork is top flight. And I'm so tickled you went to him. And just a great guy, and he's doing a good job up there.
You got to support your local businesses, because that was the first thing I thought of. We did some street scene segments down there, and they showed us, Rick and I, these cutouts they did. You know,
right?
But they're on Tech Tips for this year.
I never forgot that. It's like, you know, when I took the show and revamped it, it's like, we got to get them to build us trophies. And, you know, they were more than willing, because you got to support your local businesses. It might be easier to order stuff off Amazon, but, you know, you got to go and support your local businesses for that.
For sure. Or, you know, there's a chance they couldn't be there. So whenever I can, in fact, I just ordered a solenoid rebuild kit for that bagger bike of mine. So, and I went through Adam, pick it up Friday. Yep. No problem.
So Krista, I got a quick question for Krista. You know, you drive a Maserati, correct?
I do, and I added, I actually have three vehicles. There's a running joke going, there's a running joke actually for this year, which is for my birthday, I got COVID in a car. That's a funny story in itself. I did. I was very sick with COVID. But I sell real estate, high-end real estate down in Naples, Florida. As you know, I travel back and forth between Naples and Pittsburgh. I do commercial real estate in Pittsburgh. And when I was living in Florida, I ended up picking up a Maserati. It had 4,800 miles on it. The guy used it to drive to the airport and back. And it didn't sell. Get this. I looked at the dealer. I said, are the Carfax dirty? Why is it sitting here? You know, why? And I was looking at an SUV. It was just funny that I even bought this thing. He goes, well, it doesn't have blind spot monitoring and nobody likes the wheels on it. And I'm like,
oh my God.
first off, most of us didn't grow up with blind spot monitoring, so who cares?
Yeah.
Use your mirrors.
Yeah.
And the wheel comment was, I mean, come on, I'm a gearhead. I'm like, I can order something and swap those out in a month. Like, who cares? So I ended up getting that for a pretty decent price, and it's done me well. I've driven back and forth in that car. It's the Maserati Ghibli, the four-door sedan, six-cylinder twin turbo. And I've made the drive from Florida to Ohio 6 times in that car. And it is an excellent long distance vehicle. I've had no issues with it, knock on wood. It's been great. I have it tuned to the hilt. I got a guy in Jersey that tunes nothing but exotics. I have I have no cats. I have no resonator. All the piping is completely custom underneath. And a lot of custom work done to the exterior. And unfortunately, I just brought it back down to Florida to remain as my daily driver. I brought it up here to Pittsburgh, and I was going to use it, you know, up here for work, and found out that I was spending still quite a bit of time in Naples for work. And I was renting cars and using a lot of money to rent cars. And that was ridiculous. And ended up getting my COVID car. So because I got that, I was able to take the Maserati back down. So it won't be at the show this year, but I have a different one for the show this year. But it's not the Maserati, unfortunately. That car stays in Florida. And then I have a big lifted Ford F-150. You can say I get that from my brother, the big lifted trucks. I love it. I use it all the time. The funniest thing I get, the biggest comment I get is, why does a little person like you need a big truck? And the fact of the matter is, I use it all the time, whether I'm hauling something for someone or hauling something myself or throwing my dog in the back. But it really comes in handy. And of course, it's not stock at all. Starting a pattern here. Yeah. And the new car that I got while I was ridiculously sick with COVID and didn't know, because I didn't have the traditional symptoms yet. So I kept fighting everyone and saying, I'm just tired and I have the flu.
Yeah.
I was in Naples, Florida. I was with my family and I saw a car that I've always wanted, and I just went for it. I don't think I was really thinking clearly. I looked at my dad and I said, I'll sell my truck when I get back up north and I'll drive this.
No.
And my brother looked at me when I got back and he goes, you're an idiot if you think you're driving that car in the winter. And I was like, well, it has all wheel drive, which it does. And he goes, no, you're not driving that in the winter. And it was really kind of his idea for me to get the Maserati back down to Florida. So it worked out. So I got the new car. The new car is an Audi RS7.
Ooh.
And if anyone's familiar with the RS line, they only make so many RS models a year for whatever model they choose to make them of. And so it's the A7 body, which is that big sedan with that hatchback rear, which I've always loved. It's a very unique white color. It's not really white. It's actually called Suzuka Gray. And so it changes colors in the light a little bit. And it's a ball of fun. And I've already done a lot of work to it. So I haven't dynoed it yet. I'm probably going to try to, but I'm hoping that the statistics of everything that I put on it will be true. And I should be about 725 horsepower.
Hey, what did that Maserati start out at horsepower wise? I know it wasn't enough
it
for you.
Started, I think it was like 465 or four something like that, the model. And now with the tune and everything that I have done, I could squeal it in first gear in standard mode. So it squeals. It's a lot of fun and it's very loud. I didn't realize how loud it was going to be when I went catless. I overheated my turbos on a rally and someone said to me, you should go catless. And I went, I don't know if I want to do that. And they said, well, it might help with your turbos. So I did. And I just had no idea how loud it was going to be. I mean, it's loud.
No resonators on
that. No resonators either.
Straight pipe back.
It's actually a cross pipe. Instead of being straight piped, it's a cross pipe, but no resonators. So she's loud. She's very loud.
My son's car. I got a visit from the local authority saying his car was too loud the other day. So
I keep it in comfort mode, and I only put it in sport mode when I'm trying to have fun or if I'm on a rally. Otherwise, I just keep it quiet. The baffles still are on the exhaust, so when you put it in comfort mode, the baffles close and it keeps it a little quieter. So it's not too.
Krista, I have a question for you, if you don't mind.
Sure.
You know, the used car market is extremely high right now, and so are the homes. I've had friends, younger friends, so they're like sons and daughters of my friends, and they're just beginning, and they're telling about some of the horror stories about in the market. You have to actually show up with cash or a letter of credit. You got to buy it then, you know. Now, traditionally, Naples is one of the hot spots in the Gulf in Florida for a place to live. You know, it's the who's who that are kind of hanging out there. Tell us a little bit about, you know, your trials and tribulations of trying to deal with real estate and property and that down there. I just want to know how it's going down there in Naples.
Good question. I've never seen it like this. I have been down there almost on pretty much a permanent basis for the last 5 years until I came up here, and now I'm back and forth. But I still consider myself fairly permanent because I think I'm there every 2 months from my record so far. Originally, you know, there was quite a bit of inventory. You know, on any day when I would, you know, get on and take a look at the new listings, you would see, you know, 400 listings would hit the market between Cape Coral down to Marco. And now you're seeing 100, 125, 130. And the builders who were able to turn around a property in 6 to 8 months are now 8 to 12 months out. And part of that is because they can't get the workers. And part of it is because they can't get the materials. And the other part of it is because they literally are turning some, one developer actually turned, my family was looking at purchasing something. We found a development that we liked. We went in, we said, okay, this is the one that we like. You know, we'd like to put an, you know, an offer in on it. They go, can't put an offer in on it until next week. And we go, why? It's not even built yet. This is a, you know, speculative. And they go, well, we're behind on everything and we really can't take any offers until then. And I said, okay, so can we at least put the deposit down so we could set the price? He goes, no, you can't do that either. And I said, so what happens if the price goes up in a week? He goes, the price goes up in a week. I went, okay. it's been interesting. And it is true what you just said about, you know, people showing up and having either proof of funds or cash. Right. Cash is king. I had a listing that hit the market. We priced it what we thought was pretty fair, but I told them we could get into something because we could get into a bidding war because the market's a little insane. And that's exactly what happened. In 12 hours, it went under contract and I had three cash buyers going, what's this guy offering? What's that one offering? Well, I'll go this much. And I was like, oh my gosh. And yeah. It's stressful because you want to do right by your seller or, and also on the buyer side, you want to do right by your buyer and you want them to get the house that they love. So it's a lot of, there's a lot going on. But cash is still king. So if you come and you have the proof of funds and you say, yeah, I could do this, you can. And the thing is, it's not just Naples. It's Cape Coral, it's Marco, it's all of Southwest Florida. I'm seeing it happening everywhere. And then likewise, I'm seeing it happen in Pittsburgh even. Pittsburgh, for example, my boyfriend's in residential real estate here in Pittsburgh. They get into bidding wars over these homes. These homes are selling for 30 and 40 grand over the asking price.
Right. Time to sell
my
house, you know?
And my son, I'll tell you, I'm sorry, Rick. My, I don't know if you guys knew it, but about a week ago, some 90-year-old guy decided to make a left when he should have went straight and plowed my Mustang. And I mean, it's an 07, but it's like mint, you know, it's a hard one to find. And, the insurance company, even though they should total it, won't total it because the market value on that car is probably several thousand dollars more than I paid for it 2 years ago. Wow. It's had to increase because of the demand on the cars. And there's demand on new vehicles because they can't get enough of them with the chip shortages. I'm told there's something like 300 chips in a modern automobile or truck. And, you know, my buddy, Bob Davis out at Fairway Ford, good friend of the Manoni and the Motorcycle Show, motorcyclist, my personal friend, you know, he saw this coming and built a big giant lot, had a whole bunch of stuff there. Now he doesn't have a whole bunch of stuff there. I mean, and you're right. A lot of things are going out at list anymore.
Not at all.
I have friends that have motorcycle companies and they're selling their bikes at list because they don't know when they're going to get another one. And if you want to buy an ATV from one of the major big four, Yamaha, Kawasaki, Suzuki, you got to put your name down, put a deposit, and hope it comes in a couple of months. It's that bad.
Yes, it's like that even with boats and jet skis down in Florida. I have a gentleman who purchased a beautiful home for me in Bonita, right on the water, and he was like, I'm ready to buy some jet skis, and he had to wait months for them. And they don't even want to talk to you unless you're ready to put that deposit down and wait.
Do these people realize they have to pay property tax on these homes in a couple of years? You know, if what's going to happen then, you know, you have a $300,000 home, you ended up paying $400,000, $450,000 for it, and you got to pay taxes on that. Then
it's Naples, Rick. They're not going to do that.
If they're showing up with cash, I'm sure they can afford it. You know,
yeah,
they have planned that.
Yeah, and I'm sure they've got attorneys and financial consultants. They don't, you know, I have some friends that have property in Florida and a condo, and you know, they know how to do that. It's not like a worry. It's an inconvenience.
But the nice part about that is, you know, we have some, around where I live, we have some new developments going up. And I had a house next door build and a couple houses down build. And right now I've been watching the house that they built 2 years ago, went up for sale for twice of what they built it for. And I'm watching my house property value skyrocket now. I'm like, and now's the time to sell. I keep telling my wife, let's move. Let's get out of here.
Where are you going to go?
The problem with that is, Rick,
I'm moving out west. I want to get rid of the rain.
So I'll tell you this, though, that the only potential issue with that is everything that we just talked about, right? There's a shortage. There's not a lot of inventory out there, and everything's overpriced if it is. So you may make good money if you sell your house right now, but where are you going to go? Are you going to be able to replace it with something similar or better?
Mm-hmm. I've got a camper. I'll live in that.
That's the tough thing.
I'll take my 30-foot camper. I'll just live in that. I'll be fine. You know, I'll just blow the money. I always tell my kids, I said, you know, when they make me mad, I said, you ain't getting nothing. I'm taking it with me. So...
Hey, Krista, my son lives in the Dallas area. It's going crazy down there also. He bought a house. He bought a house two years ago, and he made $90,000 on it about 3 months ago. He got paid more than $90,000 for what he paid for it. Yeah.
It's everywhere. Yeah. It's not just Florida. It's not just up mm-hmm. here in the north. It's almost everywhere. It's wild. I don't know when it'll really start to taper, you know, and when it'll level out. I just hope it never, you know, bubble. You know, I just hope we don't see the bubble pop at all. They're saying that we're not going to, but nobody knows for sure.
Hope it doesn't tank. I hope it doesn't go, you know, we hit that peak and then it tanks completely.
Right. I think there's a couple of things that transpired to create a perfect storm. You know, a year ago, everybody was cooped up, and you saw what happened when you even had an event last year. How, you know, look at Coors event in July last year. Yeah. And then you look at what has been going on. Roy and I have attended several rallies just recently, Mount Sterling, Kentucky, and they're all extremely well attended. But when you go into like a big time bar restaurant, like the Cattlemen's Club, you know, they're short on people, short on service. You even go to a Cracker Barrel and they want you to wait outside. Even then, when you go in to get seated, it's almost empty. And they say, well, we don't have any cooks. Therefore, we don't want to get behind. Therefore, we got a waiting list. But so you've got an issue of the pandemic's getting people out and doing much more than before. The second thing is they're now equipped with an awful lot of money from the stimulus that is helping them. And the third thing is, people are, because they're mobile, they're able to before get cars, but you know, they're buying cars, boats, planes. Look at last year. When was the last time you saw somebody like Austintown Glenwood Cycle, legendary bicycle dealer in the Youngstown market since 1952, not have a bicycle to sell? When was the last time you went to a Walmart and you couldn't find even a kid's bicycle?
Bicycles were like one of the first things to go. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm just hoping, Rick, and I'm saving my money. I'm hoping that by the time we get to September, October, all those people that bought all those different toys and now don't have the extra money and going to have to go back to work, slug it out day to day, they're going to say, you know what? I don't need those jet skis or I don't need that motorcycle. And then I'm going to be there to pounce.
Nice one, Roy, to remember. Just snatch it up there.
Yeah. I think
Roy to remember that, you know, good place to put your money is housing in Naples, Roy. A condo with some kind of gigantic pool, your friends would love you for it.
Yeah, all your friends right here. You know, buy the house, buy it from Krista, get a house for her, and move down there, and we'll have a big party. How's that?
I can help you with that. I can help you with that.
Krista, you got a Bonita Springs area?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's my brother got a place up there.
Yeah, when I first moved to Southwest Florida, Bonita Springs is where I lived. I lived in Bonita, and about a year into the house, not even a year into the house, was when I found a new construction community in Naples. And first my parents bought in there, and then my father kind of worked on me and goes, you know, you could be right down the street from us. I'm like, okay. You know, us Italians, we stay close, so.
Oh, we got a few more minutes here. Roy, I wanted to ask, what do you ride as far as your homebound toys there?
Well, I have four bikes, I think, or maybe five. I have a dirt bike that's a Honda. It's a 350 Honda. And when I go over to a hunting camp in PA, we'll take the bikes and ride them over there sometimes. At home, I have a cruiser bike, what they call a cruiser. And it's a BMW 1200C, they call it. It had a sidecar attached to it. So, and that was kind of cool because it's really different. Although you have a hard time getting out of the gas station or out of the ice cream stand because people, you know, they come over and start talking to you and stuff. Then I have a big pull bike that it's got long legs on it. It's one of those 150 mile an hour bikes that have bags. It has saddle bags and it has a trunk, but it's one of the early model K bikes that BMW made. Four cylinder on the side. And I have that one. It's a little on the heavy side and it's a little tall. And that's why I bought the bike that I have now. The bike that I have now is what they call a classic. It's really a basic motorcycle. I put saddlebags on it and I put a trunk on it and put a windshield on it. And I've used it to travel all over. I've really been fortunate because I've been able to ride the bike in all the 49 states, all the Canadian provinces, Mexico. So I've really got around and saw a lot of other rallies are great because you get to see people. Sometimes you only see them once a year because we'll meet halfway across the United States at a rally. They're coming from California. I come from Ohio. So that works out kind of nice that way. But I'm a little older now and that lighter bike, not so tall, so I could put my feet flat on the ground, makes a big difference to me now when I go to move it around in the garage or whatever, you know, no matter what you're doing with it. Even if you're going to be cleaning it, once you take it off the kickstand, you don't know where it's going to go, you know. So it's kind of a bike, I guess, a standard. It's a standard bike, but you could travel anywhere you want on it. I have been able to do 1,568 miles in 22 hours. So I can cover quite a bit of ground in a day if I have to. It's got to be something at the end, though. I don't just get on a bike and ride to join the Iron Butt Club and, you know.
You got to have an iron butt for that. Jeez.
I need something at the end, you know. Yeah. A rally, a person I'm going to meet, something we're going to do. Or I'm short vacation time, so I need to get there in a hurry. Those are the kind of things that kind of get me into riding more miles in one day than normal. Now, Larry and I just came back from Kentucky, and we got down there, and he said it was only about 350 or 375. And it's like, we used to ride to Daytona. It's 1,000 miles to Daytona. We did it in a day.
Yeah.
We ride 350 miles today. And he says, I'm awful tired. I'm beat up, boy. It was hot. And I said, yeah, all the riding we do in normal days were 500 miles. That was a normal day. If it's a really nice day to ride, we'd do 600 miles. If it rains on you, we'll stop short, go 400 miles, make it up, later. But that's kind of the way we rode, weather permitting. And of course, now we have the gear, which makes a world of difference. We used to have motorcycle boots, and then we used to have to put rubber boots over top of them if it rained. Pants, we had to have those PVC pants, were terrible. They're waterproof, but when you wear them, you get wetter on the inside.
Yeah. You're sweating.
I have a question for you. Of all the places that you've traveled, on a bike, where's your favorite place that you've passed through, that you've gone, on a bike? Where is the most memorable place that you've seen or been through with all your travels?
I would say I can't think of the name, the president's on the mountain there in
Mount Rushmore.
Mount Rushmore is the most impressive thing that I've seen. I do like the Grand Tetons out west. And that's another thing, the Colorado Rockies or the American Rockies aren't as nice as they are up in Canada. The Canadian Rockies are better. But Mount Rushmore was the most impressive thing that I saw in all my travels. And while you're there, there's a nice road that runs out to, I can't think of the name of a tower out there, but
Devil's Tower.
Devil's Tower. And it's not, the road out there is great. It's fun. But as far as Devil's Tower, it's like a big pile of dirt and stone and a bunch of rattlesnakes at the top of it. So it's not like, it wasn't interesting other than the ride out there. But Mount Rushmore, I would say, was my best thing that I saw. My favorite state used to be Vermont. And I still like Vermont is really nice. The presidential mountains in New Hampshire are now my favorite area. The mountains in the east grow foliage, and they're only 6,000 or 7,000 feet tall. If you go out west, the mountains out there will be 10,000 or 12,000 feet, but it's rock. Nothing grows on it. So on your way to Colorado, 2 hours away, you'll see a dark cloud and you'll think it's going to rain, but actually that's the mountain. So I like the east because of the foliage and the things that you can do. There's plenty of things to do in your travels, museums and things like that to stop and so on and so forth. But that's what I would say was my favorite rides.
We got to wrap this up. One quick question for Roy and Krista. I ask this every time. Roy, dream bike. What is your dream bike?
I think I have it. There is nothing it won't do.
Jeez.
I am lucky. I have, I could have one that's a lot more expensive. Say, the Kawasaki, the supercharged Kawasaki. I would. That would be a dream bike. It'll go over 200 miles an hour right out of the show.
Wow.
Yeah, don't have to do anything to it. It's got the power right in the showroom floor. So to spend $25,000 or $30,000 on that bike, I could like that part of the garage. I'd be in trouble, but I'd like to have that bike.
Krista, dream car, dream bike.
Dream car would be the Ferrari Enzo. That's been my favorite. My dog's name is Enzo.
Yeah.
It's not the fastest, but I did recently, I've kind of leaned a little bit more towards the F12 Berlinetta as well. I think it's just an absolutely gorgeous car, and 12 cylinders, you can't
No.
You gotta love that. And the sound that it makes is absolutely beautiful. And actually for a bike, I'm not that well versed in bikes. I'm still learning, but I really do like the V-Rod. I know they're a little odd and they're different, but it has that little bit of Euro flair, I think. And that's why I think I like it. Yeah. But it was one of the first really Harleys that I saw that I went, I like that. Oh. And I really did like it. So the V-Rod's pretty sweet. If I could get my hands on one of those, that'd be pretty fun.
Excellent. Okay, Krista, how fast have you had that Maserati? Krista.
Like 185. I think. On a closed track.
On a closed track.
You were driving. I have to tell you, though, the RS7 makes it look slow. The RS7 is fast. It's very fast. So I'm excited to get my hands on the wheel of that car a little more.
My bucket list is I want to go so fast I pee myself. So I think 185 would do it.
Hey, Rick. Oh, 60 mile an hour. I'll do it for you.
Probably about 150 would do it. 150 would probably do it.
65 maybe, right, Rick?
How fast are we getting that Tesla? 130? Greg?
Oh, no, we were 142, I think, the last time I saw it.
It was 142.
Yeah.
I was waiting for it to start flying there.
Well, I'll tell you what, we got to wrap this episode up. Thank you so much, Roy and Krista, for joining us today.
Thanks, guys. Thank you very much.
July 25th, if you're listening or watching this, Street Scene Car and Custom Bike Show at Austin Town Park. For Larry Ward, Rick Guerrera, I'm Greg Roten. We'll see you
down the road.
When it comes to internet service, you get it all with Zoom from Armstrong. There's unlimited data for unlimited downloads, low latency for seamless streaming and gaming, plus an unmatched fiber network for speeds that can't be beat. Find out for yourself. Go to armstrongonewire.com/zoom and get high-speed internet for as low as $34.95 a month. No contracts, no hidden fees. Just internet made easy. That's Zoom Internet from Armstrong.